hey, folks, I'm WWE Hall of Famer Hacksaw Jim Duggan.
Tito Santana.
This is Kurt Angle.
This is Bret the Hitman Hart. And this is going out to Scott and Holly.
You are listening to the
Win Twice Wrestling Podcast
with Scott and Holly.
Oh, it's true. It's damn true.
And this holds for everybody. Ho!
Ladies and gentlemen, you are about to listen to the incomparable Win Twice Wrestling Podcast with your hosts, Scott and Holly. We always go over, brother, and that's the bottom line. Dig it? So sit back, relax, and prepare to be entertained.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode number 35 of the Win Twice Wrestling Podcast alongside your hosts, Scott and Holly.
Hello.
You smiled there when I did that
intro. I just sound so happy.
You've got to bring that positive energy. We've got to be in charge of our own destiny and, you know, dictate the narrative and all those middle management terms that we love
so much.
Yeah. Well, you've got to start with a little bit of positivity, haven't you? Because one of my favourite times of the week, us having a little discussion about the things that have happened in wrestling and what we've reviewed.
Yes.
And I can tell, Holly, by the way you're sitting, that you're in a little bit of discomfort. Is that right?
Brilliant, yeah.
Please share with us the story of how you managed to come a cropper.
I'm just getting old. My back hurts.
Specify maybe.
If only.
Yeah, you were moving stuff, right?
If only, yeah. Just so if you hear me move and go, ooh. It's not me. It's not because I'm having a really fun time.
She wouldn't be doing that with me. So obviously it was the pride, I guess, kicked in because God forbid you should ask someone to assist you with that.
Yeah, all right. But tell everyone how I really am, shall we?
But like, even knowing now that you kind of dinged your back, I'm pretty sure you'd still make the same decision again. If you got to replay that same situation now, you'd still.
I'm a stubborn motherfucker. Come on.
You really are.
Fiercely independent.
Well, quite, yes. But so you've got a sore back. Yes. I've got a sore neck. But to be fair, mine was just from being sleeping funny, to be honest. I don't think it's anything beyond that. But
so between us we make a whole person.
Almost a fully functioning person as well. Before we get into the show that we're covering in this one, because again we needed a shorter episode for yourself. Obviously, you had a very busy week.
I did.
Doing your dance shows and all that fun stuff. They went well, I take it.
Yeah, all good.
Yeah.
All good.
And then why are they biannual?
Why?
Yeah.
Because they are very expensive.
Oh, okay.
So we don't think it's fair to have parents pay every year, so we do it every other year.
That's fair enough. I just never understood the reason. It was only the other day when we were talking about it that I realised that it wasn't every year, because I thought you always had some form of a show. But you do, just not the proper theatre production type. Yeah, well, fair enough then. But all went well, so that's good. Before we get into the episode.
Sure.
Anything caught your eye in the world of wrestling this week?
Two things. Did you see the Bloodline absolutely demolish my guy, Randy Orton?
Yes, great.
Oh, come on.
No, it's great.
That's so sad.
And it took three of them to lift the meaty boy
up
off the floor.
It did, didn't it? That was quite impressive.
Because he said what he was getting called as 265 pounds. He went, I'm bigger.
290, I've been eating.
Which is fair.
I like that.
He seems to have, one thing I will say about Randy Orton is that, like I said, his matches have never really engaged me
they do me, yeah.
Yeah, but yours is for a different reason. Because when I said if you just think about him wrestling without looking at him, you said it's not as good. We discovered this with his match with Bray Wyatt and you said, oh, you've ruined it for me.
Yeah, you did.
But in his older and wizened age, personality-wise, he seems to be a bit more level-headed, which is good, because he just, I don't know, the stuff you see back in the day of how he was with his attitude, chip on the shoulder, the way he spoke to people, just none of it sat right with me. But I feel like certainly in his last run, he's even with when he was doing stuff with Matt Riddle, I felt like he was already on this.
I really liked those two together.
He'd realigned himself a little bit, so good for him, and hopefully that continues. But yes, I saw him get powerbombed through the announcer's table.
Yeah, I know, right?
And did you see also, speaking of the Bloodline, Jacob Fatu come out and just kill everyone in a tag team match?
Well, I did, yes. We know I did, because we had this on our little WhatsApp chat.
Oh, of course you did. Yeah, I was thinking, you're looking at me like, yes, Scott, I've obviously seen that, and you know that I have.
I did, and fine, great, but again. I just feel bad.
Why do you feel bad?
Poor old Johnny and Jumbo.
Yeah, but to be fair, did
and
you see...
And Theory and Waller.
Yeah, well, they were already kind of out of it at that point. Do you see that they were blaming, or Grayson was blaming Trish being in the front row?
Of course.
For them losing the match. Yeah, apparently so. Yeah, mm-hmm. Two distractions, I imagine. But did you see Fatu, how he got to the top rope, jumped to the side? And
I mean, it
the...
is ridiculous. Yeah.
He would do that as well when he still had his bigger frame, so that's not a new thing that he's added to his game. He was always able to do that. That's the one thing I do miss about the old Jacob Fatu from the Independents, is that, granted, he's in phenomenal shape, he looks still like a beast, but when he had a bit more junk in the trunk, shall we say, it was more physically impressive to see them do some of the stuff that he does.
What, because he was a bit bigger?
Because he was a bit bigger. Okay. Same like when you look at Kevin Owens and you see him doing really nice senton bombs and swanton, mm-hmm. all that kind of stuff. Because he's got a bigger frame, you go, oh shit, that's really... Yeah. It does. It was not to say it's less impressive that someone lighter can do it, but when you're carrying more, I feel like, understandably, it takes more to make sure you're hitting it well.
Yeah.
So what was the other thing that caught your eye?
We go to NXT.
We go to NXT?
We go to NXT, and he's there. He's
Did
in
you
a match.
Believe?
Always.
Believe in Joe Hendry. So Joe Hendry's there again?
Yes, and he was in a tag match.
He was it Trick Williams?
Yes.
Oh, against Sean Spears and All Ego Ethan Page.
Yes, yeah, loved it. Great.
Have you seen any of Ethan Page's YouTube content, by any chance? No? Oh, you're missing
Should
out.
Should I?
No, it's not your market, I don't think. No, he's a toy hunter.
Oh.
A bit like your boy Matt Cardona. And I don't think that's dissuaded you from liking him. So
it
maybe
hasn't, actually.
I don't know. Maybe it's something about these people that collect things that you seem to be drawn to in life, which is just something we're scratching at the surface of now. Just realise as I look around this room.
I didn't realise it's a thing.
No, but you
but
are
sure. Okay,
but you are kind of going, well, actually, now that I think about it, now that's been laid bare.
Oh gosh.
So I don't know, you've seen anything from AEW? Because obviously a lot of the stuff we usually cover,
mm-hmm.
in terms of the conversations for this, it rarely involves AEW.
True.
I think one thing that caught my eye over there recently is MJF's a heel again.
Yeah.
So MJF's turned into the Uber heel, which he's fantastic at, to be honest. And we saw that Bryan Danielson won the Owen Hart tournament, so he'll be going up against Swerve in the main event at Wembley. And I'll be honest... Granted, we're deciding to see progress that weekend, mm-hmm. so we're not going to AEW. But I'd have liked to have seen that match, actually. Cause I didn't
think... still can on telly.
Well, true, yeah, but I also... Well, I have to pay for that too as well, but I guess, yeah, probably still be worthwhile. And the other thing I saw, which is a bit that I was trying to remember, is did you see Mariah May?
I thought you might mention
Tony
this.
Storm?
Yeah, I did.
That was brutal.
Yeah.
I mean, granted, like, obviously... Mm-hmm. It's a lovely blade job, but the amount of blood that she gets out of that is phenomenal.
Yeah.
And it looks genuinely brutal. Even though you can see that she's pulling the stiletto punches, the way that Tony's ragdolling on it looks genuinely brutal.
You thought they did a good job?
I thought they did a very good job. It was
That's another all-in match, isn't it?
Yeah, it's to the point where...
All in, all out? I don't know what it is.
Shake it all
days.
About. Where I look at it and I almost felt uncomfortable.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Mate, not. I don't even know if it's because it was two women. Maybe that's part of it, because it's so brutal, okay. seeing that kind of bloody brawl, I don't associate with... And that's... I don't think that's necessarily me being sexist. I'm not saying they shouldn't or they can't. It just...
Okay.
It isn't as
You're
palatable.
You're not as comfortable with it as if it's two blows. It's personal preference, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, but it took me a while to warm up to female mixed martial arts as well. Because the idea of seeing women hit each other in the face, I was just like... Oh,
are you not a fan?
No, I don't know. I'm fine with it now.
You'd rather they did it with, what, pillows in their underwear?
No, see, that's what I was worried that this was going to turn into. No, it's nothing to do with that at all. Because that makes me feel uncomfortable for a different reason.
Yeah, of course.
But yeah, no, female MMA, I'm fine with. It was just seeing that level of blood and gore,
mm-hmm.
but it was brilliant. I'm aware it was brilliant, and I think it's good, but I just couldn't.
Okay.
It was unsettling a little bit to see, to me.
Fair enough.
But maybe that's just because they did such a fantastic job with it.
Yeah, maybe
I'd have felt the same if it had been two blokes doing it that brutally as well. But
what do you think about Britt Baker challenging what's her name Sasha Banks? I don't know.
Oh, okay. Mercedes Moné.
Thank you.
I don't care.
Do you not?
I like Sasha Banks in WWE, not as a person. I feel like she's got little woman syndrome.
Okay.
I feel like it's Napoleon complex with her.
Okay.
And granted, she's had to go through a lot. You know, if you've ever seen her talk about her childhood, mm-hmm. growing up, I get that. And I guess it's her mentality that's got her as far as she has. But I also think at the same time, just settle down. Like, not everyone is always out to get you.
I see.
You're not fighting the machine at every fucking turn in your life. To me, that's how it feels like it comes across. But since she's gone to AEW, I'll be honest, I couldn't have cared less.
No, me neither.
And I was expecting to care.
Yeah.
So you knew that you wouldn't care.
Yes, I
knew that. Right off the bat, because you're not her biggest fan. No.
But Britt Baker, however,
Britt Baker's
fully
great.
Backing.
Yeah, Britt fine. Baker's fine. She's really like trimmed down a bit as well.
She's lost her. I knew you wouldn't be impressed. And I saw her come out the other day. I thought, oh, she's a bit slimmer than she was before. Like, and you wouldn't like it.
No, I'm fair. You know what? Again, I mean, she's not there to impress me at the end
no,
of the
I
day.
No, I know.
And I'm impressed.
But she was
in fact,
stunning.
Yeah, I'm impressed with the fact that someone's got that kind of level of self-control to get into that good a
oh,
gotcha. Shape.
Oh, amazing.
But it just looks like you're not fragile, but just, like, I feel like I'd be worried about hugging you in case you broke
okay,
type of
fair.
Thing. Because there's nothing, there's no excess anything there anymore.
You like a bit of cushion.
I do. Cushion for thy pushing, quite, okay. quite literally. But and Britt Baker's certainly not an unattractive woman, but she wouldn't be on.
Would you want her in WWE?
Yeah.
With? Yeah.
Well, bring Adam Cole. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. No, but I think just as by herself.
Yeah.
I think she's got stuff to add. There's definitely women that I take from AEW and move them on to WWE. Funnily enough, from what I've seen from Monet, she probably isn't one of them anymore.
No.
Tony Storm offers something great. I just don't care about this timeless Tony character. I much prefer the rock grunge look. Which I know we've covered before in the past.
Yes.
I'm trying to think what else in terms of like women that I've seen on the roster that Mina Shirakawa is pretty decent.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like there's some. Oh, Chris Statlander, decent worker. Britt Baker, as we said, I'd take. Saraya, I wouldn't.
No.
Too fragile. Jamie Hayter, good, would take.
Yeah.
So there's definitely a credible amount of talent there. I don't know, specifically with Monet, she's just not landing for
just
me at all.
Just over it.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, fair.
It's like, you're good. I don't think you're as good as you think you are.
Okay.
But maybe that's just a personal preference for me.
Well, we're all allowed our own personal opinion.
Well, exactly. So what, Holly, have you got anything else?
No, sorry, that's it. Say. We're maxed out here.
And that's the end of the episode, everyone. Yeah. So 12 minutes in, we're done. No, I guess we should probably go to the meat and potatoes of the episode. I don't think we actually mentioned anywhere what we were going to be covering. It was a fairly last minute decision.
It was, yeah.
What we were going to be covering would have killed you, and you.
It really would have. Yeah.
We couldn't have got it done in that time frame. No. To be perfectly honest. So again, we needed a shorter episode, and although I wasn't necessarily thinking, let's keep in theme with doing the first, like first Raw, SmackDown,
yep.
Nitro. We have done another first, but I only realised it after I started watching it. Went, oh, okay, it's almost like we're keeping this little mini-series going.
Yes, I realised when I found it on the network and scrolled to the bottom and I was like, oh, it's the first one, okay.
Yes. And what Holly's hinting at there is we're going back to the very first Saturday night's main event from the 11th of May, 1985. I think in previous episodes, Holly, like when we're talking about around WrestleMania 1, so we're going back a little bit now for us.
Yeah,
we've
stepped back in time, yeah.
And I'm not expecting you to have perfect recollection of these conversations, but you might recall certain bits of us having discussed Saturday night's main event and how WrestleMania helped lead to this in general. I've got a couple of background stories for you just to kind of relight the fire, I nearly said there, but kind of
get my brain working again.
Effectively kick things into gear for you. So, you know, quite fairly early on a Sunday. But the venue for the event was the Nassau Coliseum in Long Island, New York. The attendance on the night was 8,300, and I found the TV rating, which was 8.8, which is unbelievable, Jeff.
In
comparison
good?
To yeah.
Oh, okay.
In comparison to what they do today, that wasn't even the highest Saturday night's main event they have. They have one that I think hits 12 in the ratings. And to give you some context, AEW doesn't hit one now. I think Raw is around about 2.
Right, okay.
And like 8.8 is staggering. Okay. But I think it also, you have to factor in that the way that people watch wrestling has changed.
Oh, for sure.
Because of all the streaming platforms, etc., etc. It was much more back in the day a thing where it was an event where you'd gather around, you'd specifically go, right, this is on at, let's say, 9 p.m. We've got to sit down and watch this for 2 hours. So it was easier to kind of gauge the metrics when it was more prevalent. which just isn't the case now. I'm not saying that's necessarily worse. I'm not also saying it's better, but it's still something that I don't know if they'll ever go back and hit those kind of numbers just with the way that media is these days. So I've got some backstory on Saturday night's main event for you. It's also from the Sportster. I feel like we're going back to the same
Get those source. Shares in.
I'm pretty sure, though, yes, the next one is from a different place, so we're fine. So again, just to set the scene a little bit for you. So WWE has produced many shows over the years that have a rich history. Whether it's weekly programming like Raw or SmackDown, which have been running for over two decades, or it's a once-a-year pay-per-view event like the Royal Rumble or WrestleMania, WWE has provided programming that helps showcase countless memorable moments throughout the company's existence. However, it's worth noting that there were other past WWE programming that showcased a long list of exciting moments for the company over the years, yet arguably didn't get the recognition it deserves. One could argue the same over Saturday night's main event, WWE's recurring specials that used to air on NBC and Fox, which debuted in 1985 during the height of the 1980s wrestling boom period. When WWE became a mainstream powerhouse during the 1980s, thanks to its showcasing larger-than-life cartoony figures on its programming, especially with Hulk Hogan as its franchise performer, it paved the way for WWE to break into broadcast TV by airing multiple specials on NBC. As NBC officials were impressed with the TV numbers WWE achieved on MTV with its specials in the early 1980s, WWE provided Saturday night's main event for the network, the perfect opportunity to launch the company to new heights of popularity. The first Saturday night's main event premiered in May 1985, featuring Hulk Hogan successfully defending his WWE Championship belt against Cowboy Bob Orton. From its initial run from 1985 to 1992, which also included a brief run on Fox during its final year in 92, Saturday night's main event featured many classic matches that especially highlighted the best of WWE's rock and wrestling generation, from Hulk Hogan and Andre the Giant teaming together to take on King Kong Bundy and Big John Studd in 1985, to Hulk Hogan defending his WWE Championship against Big Boss Man in a steel cage match in 1989. After all these years, Saturday night's main event may not be the most talked about show, considering it's been defunct as a TV special for many years. However, Saturday night's main event played an integral role for many fans growing up watching WWE during the colourful period of the 1980s and early 1990s. So that's just a little bit of background about the show itself. I've got a follow-up on that as to who basically formulated the idea for this. Okay. And it's probably not who you think. So the creation of Saturday night's main event. You're getting a bit emotional over there.
No, sorry, I yawned. I'm so sorry.
Only did I see Holly yawn, she yawned six times. Not that I'm counting.
I'm very tired, but I am listening. But it makes my eyes water, so it looks like I've been crying.
So she's just looking at me tears in her eyes. I'm like, what did I say here?
A bit emotional.
So this one is from Wrestling Inc. Website. So following the success of the inaugural WrestleMania, NBC became interested in scheduling WWE, then WWF content for their block of late-night Saturday programming. Former NBC employee, WWE executive, and the president of Yes Network, John Filippelli, John Filippelli, disclosed in an interview on the Insiders podcast, it was Dick Ebersole's influence at NBC that led to the creation of Saturday night's main event, as an occasional fill-in for Saturday Night Live. So this is the part I was saying you might remember. We were discussing, your face tells me that you know exactly what I'm talking about.
I do.
Dick Ebersole kind of forged that relationship with Vince McMahon, and after how well WrestleMania did, he thought, well, this is going to be a good opportunity to get some of this out there to, like I said, whenever they would have break periods for Saturday Night Live. Ebersole saw that success, and then he just piggybacked and made a series out of it, says Filippelli. We had no intention of doing that. So you've got to give Dick credit for advancing it to where he did. We had nothing to do with that advancement. That was all Ebersole. The executive producer of SNL from 1981 to 1985, Ebersole created No Sleep Productions in 1983. Operating as an independent production company, Ebersole produced late-night content for NBC, such as Friday Night Videos. Ebersole left his SNL position in 1985 to focus more on his company, as well as co-produce Saturday Night's main event with Vince McMahon. The show debuted on May the 11th, 1985, and garnered an 8.8 television rating. The five wrestling specials in 1986 registered ratings of 10.4, 10, 9.3, 9.4, and 9.7. The show set a series high of 11.6 on March the 14th, 1987, which was 2 weeks before WrestleMania 3. In total, NBC aired 29 Saturday night main event specials from 85 to 91, as well as 5 Friday night spin-off specials, the main event. So that's the background that I've given you. I've set the table on Saturday night's main event. Holly, just realised you're wearing odd socks. What happened?
Oh, I was hoping you wouldn't notice.
I just saw black and then saw grey.
Yeah.
So was that just a...
I'm really not okay today. Look, I'm just tired.
Okay.
I'm not staying at my place.
No, of course.
So it's just... But this is the least of our concerns with what I turn up to work wearing tomorrow.
Oh, God, yeah, of course. And we've got that work experience being done as well, so that'd be interesting. Before we get into what actually unfolds on the show...
Sure.
Did you have to mentally prepare yourself in any way, shape or form, thinking, oh, we're going back to 1985?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, so, not massively, but it was just a bit like, okay, let's effectively forget everything that I've seen recently and let's just go back. But I knew I was capable of, like, being open-minded for an older show because I've done it.
Yeah.
And some of them I've enjoyed.
Yes.
So I did go into it open-minded.
Did you think, oh, we might get some treats of people that have been taken away from us?
Do you know what? I didn't even think about it. Didn't even cross my mind. And obviously, you know, I texted you yesterday.
Yes.
But it didn't even cross my mind. And even when they're on the, like on the telly, when it comes up and says they're like the box next to it, like the little blurb.
Which you try not to read.
Absolutely not. So I didn't even have a little look. I don't know what it said. So yeah, I was very happy.
Yes, you can tell. We'll mention it when we actually get to that moment during the show. And don't they come back in fine form?
Oh, they do.
So the show opening. So Holly, we're once again jumping into the Win Twice DeLorean and heading back to 1985 in the land of the WWF. The show opens and we see Cyndi Lauper and the WWF Women's Champion Wendy Richter set in front of a green screen where the musician is talking strategy. Before I carry on there, as soon as I said the name Cyndi Lauper, your head started shaking violently.
I will be honest, as soon as it started, I went... Oh, it's this era. It's like the music connection.
MTV, yeah.
And I literally died a little bit inside. And I was like, oh no, we're here.
On the plus side, we do hear sage words of advice from the musician, such as, you gotta keep your trunk strong. What does that mean?
Just always tense your abs, just the whole
keep
time.
Your trunk strong.
Just, no matter what you do.
And it's imperative that Moolah doesn't grab a hold of her hair. She also says the phrase, you know we come from our stomachs.
Okay.
Okay, thanks, Cyndi. I don't know what exactly she's implying here, but I think Lorel Bano would have made more sense, and that is saying something. You're thinking, who the fuck's that?
Yeah.
It's all right, he's only on the show several times. They're going to use the bad principle, which is beat, annihilate, and destroy. From here, we quickly transition to... Because again, let's not let Wendy Richter ever talk.
No.
Like, Cyndi Lauper's the attraction.
She tries to
here.
Say, like, literally something and gets shut the fuck down so quickly.
We're going to use the bad principle. Yeah, it's got beat, annihilate, destroy. It's going to be fucking great. Well, she doesn't say fucking great, but it's just too much.
It concerns me how enjoyable that impression is.
Well, I did see you kind of put your head in your hand.
I do quite like it, I'll be honest.
And that's me not fully committing to it either, because I don't want to go down that road and have Cyndi Lauper be a recurring character in these things. But in The Young Rock... the TV show, I don't think you've seen it, worth a watch. The person that plays Cyndi Lauper is Becky Lynch, and her impression is spot on.
Okay.
Spot on. Really good. Really good. From here, we're quickly transitioned to the same backdrop, but this time it's Hulk Hogan and Mr. T. We're greeted with, and I don't know about you, Holly, but I think Hogan was trying to fight the urge to go full Dusty Rhodes, babe, on this promo, as he is gesticulating and moving his hands very much like the Dream would.
Yeah.
I think it's also around about this time that I noticed that it wasn't actually a backdrop. They're actually in front of people in the entryway. Because I thought it was a green screen. But because the quality's so bad.
It just looks like they're stood in like a little hallway.
But then you realise that they're actually not.
Yeah.
Because obviously later on people come out of said green screen. And I was like, what the fuck?
Yes.
But yeah, Hogan is not quite in his full pomp. Let me tell you something about, but he has got some lines in this fucking show, let me tell you, that are going to get referenced later on.
Good-o.
Hogan informs us that we won't be alone, No, that he won't be alone. Oh, we won't be alone. Lovely. Oh, oh, bless him.
That's what I need to hear.
Hogan informs us that he won't be alone, as his main man, Mr. T, will be out there with him as he defends the WWF title against Cowboy Bob Orton. Holly is annoyed.
So sorry.
Holly is annoyed, yeah.
Boom. Fucking shit.
Because I thought when you saw Mr. T, you'd be annoyed, and you snored very loudly. I felt like, because you as well, you found out what was going to be in the actual match, or what was going to be on the show, you're getting upset. But don't worry, they spoil the full card pretty much for you at some point, so that's good.
Yeah, they do.
Oh shit, maybe it isn't a green screen, as we see a jobber walk by in the background, and I'm given immediate Al Hayes backstage at Mania 1 memories.
Yes, for sure.
Oh, wouldn't this have been great if he was here? Mean Gene was fine, to be fair, but I would have very much liked to see some Al Hayes on this show, which sadly is not one of the ones that we get.
No.
Mr. T says he'll also gladly put Roddy Piper in line if he steps out of place. We now get treated to a wonderful intro package with transitions and cuts that would make the finest of B-movies blush. And Holly, that music. Talk to me about that music they play.
Awful. So bad.
It's so 80s.
It is. And this, I think this for me was when my brain literally went, okay, you have to like, you
brace
have
yourself.
To get prepared now. But it was awful. But also in the clips they show, again, I just went, oh, cool. It's Hogan and Piper looking older here than they do in the show we just, like, bloody watched.
Well, you're not wrong.
Looks like he's aged in reverse.
Yes, he's Benjamin Button.
He's like 50 here. Mm-hmm. But when we just saw him, he looked a lot younger.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Piper gets his moment to get flowers as well in this show. So
good.
Don't worry
about
that.
I'm glad
that.
Because I'm livid.
Are you a happy person?
No.
The final shot of the intro sees the image of Hogan flexing at the close of WrestleMania 1 on a red to black faded screen that reads Saturday night's main event. We're now live in the arena.
We are.
We get introduced in the packed arena by the not yet hoarse and screamy Vinnie Mac, who welcomes us to the show and promotes the two title matches set for the card, as well as the two biggest names in the sports entertainment crossover, Cyndi Lauper and Mr. T. Speaking of treats and big names, Vince follows this introduction with one for his colour commentator, Jesse the Body Ventura.
So friggin' happy.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen, Holly has been reunited with one of her new favourites. And when I give you him back, I give him in style. Jess is wearing what I can only describe here as being if the wardrobes of Randy Savage and Elton John banged, and banged hard, and the clothing child that sprung forth was trimmed with black lace. What a mental outfit the body has on, but I'm sure Holly was more than happy with it.
It's so happy.
Ridiculous.
So freaking happy.
And it was at this point that I got a text that says, Jesse!
Yeah.
No context, not I'm watching the show, just Jesse screamed.
Yes.
Jess is pumped up, and he isn't just excited because of the two title matches. He's also pumped for the six-man tag team and the appearance of the JYD, which I believe he was forgetting and got prompted by Vince.
He definitely did.
And,
yeah.
The JYD! Yeah, the Junkyard!
It did make me chuckle, though.
Before we head out to our first in-ring outing, Vince also tells us that we're invited to Cyndi Lauper's special Mother's Day celebration.
Oh, give a fuck.
And Holly, if I tell you I was excited for this one, I'd be lying straight to your fucking face.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad we're on the same wavelength.
Oh, for sure. You must have known this is how I would feel about this.
I mean, I'm literally calling out. I might as well say Holly sighs. Like, yeah. I could just know what you're going to do. But we're at the opening contest of the evening.
We are.
Only a four-match card that we get shown during the broadcast. And this one is just a litany of people that you've seen in the past. So you know literally all of them.
I knew all of them.
We've got the Iron Sheik, Nikolai Volkov and George the Animal Steel with classy Freddie Blassie, who is fantastic later in the show, versus the US Express and Ricky the Dragon Steamboat with Captain Lou Albano. You know exactly what I'm talking
exactly
about.
I know exactly the point.
It's fucking amazing.
It's ridiculous.
We see Sheiky Baby walking his way to the ring with the Iranian flag held high in the air before swiftly being taken to Mean Gene Okerlund, who's with the Babyface team at the entryway.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't like this. I don't like having like little interviews when people are in the ring and stuff like that. It feels like my focus is split. I'm getting antsy.
Oh.
Holly, I do not believe I have either the strength or the vocabulary to describe what Captain Lou is wearing. Firstly, the rubber band through the cheek is outrageously disgusting, yet there is a part of me that wants to pull that bastard as far back as I can and let it ping back into his face.
Yep.
His hair is slicked back with grease, and he looks to be wearing a sleeveless trucker vest with his ample gunt protruding over his trousers. That about cover it?
Spot on.
And I said he would make more sense than Cyndi Lauper.
Yeah.
In the promo. So just to kind of tie that one off for you, because you looked confused when I mentioned his name earlier. Barry Windham says that this is the greatest team he can think of, and if there was ever a night to take care of things and get it done, this was the night. He just wishes it was for the tag team titles, which is silly, as it's a six-man tag. Now we hear from the captain of the babyface ship, who says that if Freddie tries to interfere in the match, he will cream him.
Ooh, tasty.
Oh, I don't think I'd want to see that. Mm-mm. You want to see Lou get a little bit creamy with Freddie Blassie?
Who knows what they want on these Saturday night things?
Well, fair point. Oh, sweet Christ. As Albano... Why do I keep saying Albano? Albano. It's, but I keep poshing it up. I don't know why.
Potato.
Potato. Albano. Albano. Albano turns... Oh, sorry. Oh, sweet Christ. As Albano turns, he also appears to have more elastic bands through his ears.
Yeah, it's grim.
It really is. Grim. I know that kind of sets your heart racing for wrong reasons.
I don't like it.
Mean Gene helps to finish setting the scene before we head back to the ring, where Nikolai Volkov would like to sing the Soviet national anthem.
Of course.
Both he and Sheik stand to attention, and I can only imagine that the Sheik has never saluted before in his entire life, as he stands there looking like he's about to enact, "I'm a little teapot, short and stout, here's my handle, here's my fucking spout." Because his hand is about this far away from his head, and by this I'm doing about a foot, two foot.
Yeah. Yeah, about 2 foot.
But just do that. What's wrong with you? Really annoys me. And but you're standing there like a teapot. Wow. Anyway.
Really made you aggy, didn't it?
But it did lead me to something that I discovered. Oh, and I think, like, in this podcast, we might be the ones to have realised this first, okay?
Okay.
So, as you know, this is what Iron Sheik always does. He grabs the mic after the Soviet national anthem's been booed. He goes, "Russia number one, Iran number one, USA, Hawk Tour."
Ooh. Oh,
Iron Sheik is the original Hawk Tour girl.
Yeah.
That has blown my
fucking mind.
Very
good.
He says it exactly like that. Hawk Tour.
Yeah.
So there you go. Get that on a shirt.
Yeah.
Sheiky baby, Hawk Tour.
Sheiky baby.
That's going to be a shirt, because I was messing around with that the other day, wasn't I?
Yes, you were.
Should we touch upon that, as I just mentioned it?
Sure.
So I thought down the line, when we get to a position where we've got enough following, there'll be some interest in some sort of merchandise, like some shirts or hats or something. I don't know. I just thought, oh, that's fun. So I went onto this AI generator just to see what I could come up with. And I came up with a lot of theme shirts for you, Holly, didn't I?
Yeah.
I simp for Holly. That was one of them. What was the other one? Oh, yes, I'm Holly from the podcast.
I hate that so bad. That makes me so awkward.
No, it's so
funny.
And
your mates are to blame for that.
One of my mates went over to Holly and said, "Oh my God, it's Holly from the podcast." Livid. And Holly's like, "Please stop doing that."
Every time he bloody saw me, he did it. I was like, "Stop, please."
And Holly gets very, very embarrassed. She's too modest, that's why.
No, yeah. Just...
But I'm thinking maybe we add that one into the repertoire at some point. Okay, right. So after the originator of the Hawk Tour movement. There you go, the Hawk Tour movement.
Yeah.
Now the theme that the Babyface team...
Ooh.
The theme tune.
Oh, it's brilliant.
Now the theme tune that the Babyface team make their way to the ring with is just outstanding.
It's so good.
Sounds like a precursor to a montage on Baywatch. And we also see that Captain Lou has completed his mental breakdown with a massive pair of fuck-off sunglasses on. But that tune is just like it.
Yeah,
was,
no, it
honestly,
was,
it was a medley.
Good. It was good.
Barry Windham and George Steele look to start things off, but no, the animal exits, and it will be the Sheik to begin for the heels. The two men circle until they eventually lock up. Side headlock from Windham sees Sheik back him against the ropes. As the two men separate, Sheik throws a big right hand, but this gets blocked, and Windham throws one of his own. With the Sheik in general, he looks like a man that's never been stable.
Okay.
And not as in mentally, sorry, has a physical, stable base. He's so oddly proportioned walks so rigid that I feel like a little push and he'd just go miles. But he was an amateur wrestler, so you've got to have a phenomenal base.
Yeah.
But the way he walks is like, I expect him to just timber at any moment. Like, you know those marching wind-up toys that march and then they just fall over and they're still doing that on the floor? That's what I imagine the Sheik to do if he goes down. With the headlock now reapplied, Barry celebrates like a goof before deciding to hit another and returning to the side headlock. Wyndham gets shoved off, but shoulder tackles Sheik to the canvas, dropped down by the Sheik, who unbelievably manages to leapfrog his opponent.
Oh, I know.
I was stunned.
I genuinely was shocked.
I didn't know he could leave his feet, apart from that shit drop kick we saw at WrestleMania 1.
We know I like a leapfrog anyway, yeah. But I was well impressed. Yeah.
But his hip toss is blocked, and he himself is sent for the ride instead. The Sheik, who found himself in enemy territory, gets a tomahawk chop to the top of his head, courtesy of the dragon, before a delayed body slam from the legal man. Armringer sees Rotundo now tagged in, and he takes flight with a double axe handle to the appendage before tagging out to allow Steamboat to hit a top rope tomahawk chop. The dragon's butcher counter is in full service as a karate chop drops the Sheik before the Armringer is reapplied. Several yanks to the shoulder by the dragon, who returns Rotundo into the fray, and they connect with a double back elbow. Big body slam from Rotundo, and elbow drop follows in quick order, and this leads to a two count. Front face lock from the former Syracuse amateur, and we now see Steamboat back in as the legal man, dropping Sheik with a chop. A lot of chopping. Reversal off the ropes results in Steamboat getting trapped in an abdominal stretch, but he manages to power pout. Great typo. Power out with a hip toss before hitting the same on Steel and Volkov, who run into the ring after. The crowd are very loud and really into this action, as the three babyfaces stand tall in the ring as the heels take a moment to gather themselves on the outside.
Mm-hmm.
Two things I'd like to point out at this juncture.
Okay.
Firstly, Wyndham, Rotundo and Steamboat must be very new to high-fiving and shaking hands, as every time they do it, it appears to be the first time the concept was ever put into practice.
It doesn't look natural. Timing at all, does missed. It? It's so funny.
It's like, yeah, yeah. Ooh. It's like pretending to have camaraderie when you don't know who you're there yes. with at all. Second point, the referee's trousers are only 4 inches below his nipples, and I feel there is a girdle involved underneath the shirt. We're taken to a short break, and as the screen returns, we appear to have missed little action. Steamboat has an armringer applied moments after the conclusion of the USA chant to the Iron Sheik. Big power slam from Steamboat is impressive, and he follows that up with a lovely missile dropkick.
And do you know what? It was lovely having Jesse back, because do you know what? He actually tells you what's going on.
He does.
Which was delightful. It wasn't just... We still get, obviously, what Vince's manoeuvres, and Jesse does do it once, but every other time I was like, oh, it's so nice to actually have yeah. him telling me what is going on.
That's fair. He heads back up one more time and connects with a crossbody, but the ensuing pinfall attempt is broken up by Volkov, who is then jumped by Wyndham. Volkov has made the tag, but Steamboat peppers with rights to the midsection before throwing a chop for good measure. Comrade Volkov is then sent face first into the boot of Wyndham, who tags in, and he and the dragon connect with double drop kick to the Russian.
Mm-hmm.
Two count before Rotundo is tagged, and the US Express quickly put Volkov back down with a double back elbow. Leg drop, make it two from Rotundo, but the animal enters the ring and breaks up the pin attempt. The distraction allows Nikolai to start turning the screw, but this is short-lived as Rotundo slips out the back of a body slam attempt and looks for an O'Connor roll. Near fall for the baby faces. Wild right from Volkov is ducked, and Rotundo looks for a backslide, which also gets a near fall. A messy sunset flip sees the two men in a heap in the corner, and no count is made.
That is a little bit awkward and longer than you'd like it to happen.
Well, there's another one coming up. Tag to Wyndham, who ducks a clothesline attempt before looking to wrap up an elaborate sunset flip of his own. This time, instead of landing in a heap in the corner, the two men are now entangled in the ropes.
Mm.
Steel is the legal man, and he begins either a possession or an elephant impression before locking up with one half of the former tag champions. What is he doing?
I don't know.
It's so bizarre.
I guess that's the point, isn't yeah. it? But it's just ludicrous.
Heavy right hands between the two men continue until the animal has had enough and looks to retreat to his corner, but the current tag champs don't want that smoke and drop off the apron. O'Connor roll from Wyndham earns the faces the 1, 2, 3, and the opener is in the books. This place is going bonkers, Vince calls on commentary. And he's not wrong, actually. The fans are really yeah. quite loud for it.
Yeah.
Steel decides to tear into the turnbuckle, and as he does so, he's jumped by Volkov and the Sheik, who he valiantly fights off.
Mm-hmm.
As the animal's in full fight mode, Albano returns to the ring in order to tame the beast, having had a history as his former manager.
Mm-hmm.
Holly, thoughts on the match? What did you score it?
Do you know what? I didn't mind it. It was fine. It was a fine opener.
Yeah?
I thought it was all right.
Yeah?
I like the... Wyndham, Rotunda and Steamboat all together.
Yes.
I really like that. Yeah. Like they're all in matching gear.
You couldn't get more, like, pure baby faces, exactly, could you, than those three at the time.
No, so I didn't mind it. I thought it was a nice opener, eased me in nicely. What did I score? I feel like I look at these scores at a later time and go, what are you doing?
Either too high or too low. Yeah. I'm guessing too high on this one.
I think I've done it well too high.
Okay.
2.75.
Okay. I mean, I should caveat and say I didn't look up Dave's score for this because it wasn't a pay-per-view event. I gave it 2.
Okay.
So I thought it was solid.
Yeah.
It didn't have anything massively exciting. The bits where I really enjoyed it were all Steamboat.
Yeah.
All Steamboat moments. Although, Sheik going up for a leapfrog, that gave it a little bit, to be honest.
A little extra.
I'll be honest, I wasn't expecting high-quality matches on this card. So I thought 2 stars, I was like, do you know what? Not bad.
But I do wonder as well if my 2.75 also comes still from the excitement of having Jesse back in my ear.
Yeah, that's true. That's not the only... ear. In your ear. Yeah,
in my ear.
Just making
Did
sure
I not enunciate all... that properly?
No, it's fine. I'm just making sure that that's what you intended to say as well.
Rude.
So Jesse was in your ear, and you were happy. So,
I was. So maybe I do feel like that probably gave it a bit of an extra.
I don't think there's anything massively wrong with your score. It's higher than I'd give it, but, you know, we're not a million miles apart, are we, on the scoring of that one?
No.
Cool.
Lovely.
We now head to Mean Gene, who's standing at the entryway, and he informs us that he plans on sorting this mess out. As the tag champs walk by him, he halts them and asks why they shunned George the Animal Steel. Freddie Blassie's response to that? He's a fruitcake!
Yeah.
Fair point. Apparently, George didn't tag when he was supposed to.
Okay.
I assume when he was on the outside not tagging in rather than the other
way
around.
Otherwise
that's stupid. But maybe he was going for stupid, who knows. As the animal now approaches from the distance, he strikes the Sheik, who swings back in response. Albano is in there shoving Blassie, and everyone is now looking for a fight in this chaos. And you're probably like, I don't know what's going on.
I don't really care.
I'm not interested. Make it stop.
If I didn't care here, I certainly didn't care for what came next.
I haven't quite got there, but Mean Gene sends it back to Vince, who now introduces us to Piper's Pit. But first, recaps on the events from WrestleMania 1 that led to the tension as Orndorff lost for his team in the headline attraction.
Mm-hmm.
Holly, I feel like you've got a lot of thoughts about this upcoming segment, so I'm going to let you take the lead on what emotions were flowing through you for this next segment.
Oh, I just can't be fucking bothered with it. I just can't. As soon as they said it was a Piper's Pit, I was like, no.
Where did your brain take
you? Do this to me. It took me to flashbacks to that really shit one we saw.
Morton Downey Jr.
Oh, God.
Thought it might.
Honestly. I mean, when I saw who is on it, I like him. So, fair enough. But I was just a bit like, I don't care about seeing people sit down and have a chat. If I wanted to watch that, I'd fucking watch a talk show.
Yeah.
This is wank.
Okay. So, Piper's Pit. Buckle in, ladies and gentlemen. Back in the ring, and we see Piper take a seat, and he requests Mr. Wonderful join him as he wants to talk man to man. Holly, I'm not sure I have seen shorter white shorts in my life than what Paul Orndorff is wearing this evening.
Oh, I do like a cheeky pair of little white shorts. But my question is, if he's just been invited to have a sit down chat, why has he not got top on?
Yeah.
Like, it's fine, but it's a bit odd.
Oh, it's fine, is it?
Well, I mean, he's got a great physique.
Yeah, he does.
But also, for me, this is really just a pointless point that I'm going to say here. They sat a little bit too close, also, for my liking.
Okay, personal space. Big rule of Holly's
there. It
really
is for me.
Do not encroach.
Yeah.
So he does take a seat next to Hot Rod, who puts his arm around him, saying he wants to talk to him about WrestleMania. No sooner does he mention the name of the event, Mr. Wonderful has snatched the microphone from him and instructs Ace to go stand in the corner. At first, Bob looks to do this before returning with a bewildered look on his face, saying, "What?" Orndorff challenges him to go on, make my day, which the fans appear to enjoy.
Yeah, I don't... I
thought it was shit.
I don't really get it, but fine.
Hot Rod takes the microphone back and has a brief meltdown before requesting Orton head to the corner, as Orndorff is a little afraid. "Are you a happy person now?" asks Piper as he momentarily gets in the face of Orndorff.
Such a shrill fucking voice. Like, how is it possible that in later years I actually go, "Oh yeah, you know what, he's all right. Now, just stop."
Because he was basically portraying himself as being unhinged. So it's a whole part of the character. It's the...
irritating.
As he's talking. Like he did it, was it after WrestleMania 2? his match with his boxing match with Mr. T. And he's on commentary and he's going, just talking like an absolute lunatic. Once again, Hot Rod tells him to sit down, which Orndorff wittily responds, ladies first. Decent. He won me round a little bit on that one because the first one I thought was shit.
Yeah.
Surprisingly, Piper obliges and says that he understands that Mr. Wonderful is going through. Well, not really. He doesn't understand it because he's a loser. With that, Orndorff is back on his feet.
Yeah, I've just put, Mr. Wonderful clearly doesn't want to sit down because he just gets up and down like a fucking yo-yo.
Yeah, like horse draws.
Oh, I just can't be bothered with it.
As he does, Orton begins to walk forward and Orndorff yells, stay. And as Piper stands up, he screams, sit. Both men do as they're told, but Piper is soon back up, annoyed at the fact he did what he was told. Again, that bit, didn't mind. Hot Rod eventually gets Orndorff back in the chair before reminding him that although he's out here playing the big shot, it was his shoulders that were pinned to the canvas. Mr. Wonderful asked Piper where he was when it was all said and done, seeing as that he hightailed his way out of there. Piper rambles about how he was fighting T, Hogan and everyone, and then says Orndorff lost his guts. Mr. Wonderful says that Piper has been drinking too much of his own bathwater. That's an image. Me personally, I'd say any would be too much, but that might just be my preference. Hot Rod pokes his finger in the chest of Orndorff, or as it says here, Porndorff, and says he thinks he is nothing but a bit of garbage, and if he wants to fight, he would slap him just as quickly as Wonderful would slap him back.
Oh, I just don't give a fuck.
Piper says that Orndorff embarrassed him, Ace, and his own family. Ooh. Both men are now standing as Orndorff tells Piper not to mention his family. Hot Rod says, if that is the way Mr. Wonderful wants to be, he's going to take his ball and leave. He drops the mic, makes to exit, but swivels and swings a right hand that Orndorff blocks before dropping Piper with one of his own. Ace gets a right hand for his troubles too, before Mr. Wonderful returns his focus to Piper, who he begins shaking around by the hair. With Hot Rod cinched in a pile driver, it's only the cast encased left forearm of the cowboy to the back of the head that stops the move from hitting. As Orndorff rolls to the floor, we now see Mr. T in a Hulkamania vest sprint to the ring where he checks on the well-being of Mr. Wonderful. T has hold of a flex bar and prevents Orndorff from re-entering the ring as a wild Piper is stood with a chair in hand. That's the end of the segment, Holly.
Yeah, it is. Thank fuck.
So, not for you, that one?
No. Do you know what? I would rather have had... Do you know how angry I get? What pay-per-view was it we watched that was in Australia? Australia
Elimination Chamber.
And every 5 minutes there was a fucking clip of Australia. I'd have rather fucking watched that.
Oh, wow.
Than this absolute dog shite.
Oh, shit. Well, you know, the dog shite might not quite be over just yet.
Oh, I know. I know.
Back near the entryway, we see a concerned-looking Hogan, who Gene asks what he thinks about the scene that just unfolded. Hulk says this is exactly what goes through Piper's head, and this is what the WWF needs to get rid of. He then quickly changes the topic to Mother's Day and says that it will be a special match for my mother, brother. In a very confusing turn of phrase.
I actually really enjoyed that.
It's going to be a special match for my mother, brother.
You just made me chuckle.
Okay. You mean your uncle?
Oh, your mother's brother.
Okay. Happy Uncle's Day. I feel like it's
my mother, brother. Comma, a brother.
But he just says it, mother, brother.
I liked it.
Yeah, I bet you did.
Anything would have been better than what I'd just seen, so I was happy.
He can't think of anyone he would rather get in the ring with to see how bad his arm actually is. Okay. Hulk says that Orndorff has changed because of all the Hulkamaniacs that got behind him, as Mr. Wonderful wasn't used to support, and Hogan hopes he can keep it up. Keep what up?
Well.
Well, in those white shorts, you'd fucking know, wouldn't you?
You bloody would.
Okay.
Oh, I feel like I know what's coming.
Oh, you know what's coming.
I know what's coming.
So Mean Gene says that what's Hulk going to do? But Hulk interrupts and goes, what's he going to do when the Hulkster runs wild on you, Daddy? So we've got another Daddy reference. Holly?
I hate this so much.
As soon as I heard that, I went, excellent.
Yeah, that's write literally, that down. I've just written, why? Why the Daddy thing? I hate it. It's so weird.
And those are the Hulkster's parting words before flexing in front of the camera. For the match itself, we've got Ace Cowboy Bob Orton with Roddy Piper versus Hulk Hogan with Mr. T for the WWF title. And I assume that the rest of the men just stayed by the ring for Hogan to make his entrance.
I'd assume so.
Because they were already there. Well, Holly, This was the match I was expecting to end the show, not take place at the halfway point.
Yeah, I'll be honest, this happened. I paused and looked at the time and went, don't fucking tell me this lasts for God knows how long. I could have told you
that. But I do have a story for you.
Oh, hit me with it.
As we hear Real American play, you will notice how everything else, audio-wise, seems muted. That's because it is muted. Holly, if you listen carefully, when the commentary audio from Vince does begin to channel in, you can hear the faint tones of Eye of the Tiger in the background, which was the song used prior to Real American, thanks to the Hulkster's involvement in Rocky III as Thunderlips.
Oh!
You can just hear, as Vince talking here, ding, 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 in the background.
I see.
But obviously they don't have the rights for that, so they blasted it over with Real American before it actually became his theme anyway. But it was quite interesting, because when I heard it, I was like, oh, I know that this wasn't the time he had this.
Oh, whereas, you know, I'm just sitting there, like, bopping away.
So I was listening for it.
Oh, nice.
Another point worth noting. What do you think of the old WWF title?
Tiny.
Okay, my guess, you didn't even notice it was different from the one you have accustomed to him having for the majority of his reign, but you just said it was tiny,
yeah,
so you did spot
it.
It
looked small to me.
It looks... not... old, well, it does look old-fashioned, but it doesn't look grand. It
no,
looks
it doesn't.
Like a regional territory title from back in the 70s and 80s. Mm-hmm. Which
yeah, I guess I noticed that.
I'm very impressed you noticed that, because my note assumed that you didn't.
Ooh.
You'd have gone, was it?
No, it did look smaller, shall we say.
Yeah, well, it was. As Hogan panders to the fans from the ring, we head to a commercial break. Their commercial breaks get weird towards the end of this show, by the way.
Yeah,
as well.
They really do. Like,
really,
really, really frequent.
Really strange. When we return, Hulk is feeling a bit froggy as he rips the vest clean off Mr. T, who then returns the favour to the Hulkster.
Why?
Would you watch this version of Magic Mike?
No. This is so weird to me. I was like, okay, Mr. T's not wrestling, right? So why does he need to take his top off?
Well, he didn't have much choice.
And
in
why
fairness.
Is it stripped off? And also, if you watch, it doesn't come off properly either, which is a bit icky. But...
oh. The ick.
It is a bit icky.
Oh, okay.
It's, you know, if we're bringing this in, it's a little bit odd, because he gets out of the ring and I'm like, oh dear, it's still tied around him.
Oh dear.
Just rip it off.
So that's for ick number one of the show.
If you're going to get undressed, take all your clothes off. Like, not, no, hang on. Hang
Sorry?
On.
Want to run that by me again?
Hang on, that makes no sense.
Your face gave away that you didn't even know what the fuck you just said
I'm
there.
Like, so if he's having his t-shirt ripped off, have it all off.
Yeah.
Like,
well, I think that was the intention.
I know, but then if you saw that it was still, like, hanging around you, you'd just rip off that, like, one string of material left and take it off, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, he doesn't.
Yeah. What a bitch.
I know it's pathetic to put on that, but I had to find something to... I
wasn't calling you a bitch there either, to
be fair.
Kind
of like, I don't even care.
No, you scare me. When the topic of Orton's cast comes up, and Vince describes... Well, you just told me to take my clothes off if I'm taking them all off. Orton's cast comes up, and Vince describes it as controversial. Jess steps in and says he sees nothing controversial about it whatsoever, as Ace had injured his arm.
Mm-hmm.
The bell sounds as Hogan slowly walks back to his corner and Cowboy runs after him to blindside the champion. You will note Orton is wearing a pair of leather chaps. Holly, do you own a pair of these? As I feel like your answer is going to be yes.
Why do you think I would have a pair of arseless chaps? No, stop.
Okay, you don't.
Stop.
I genuinely thought you would.
Why?
Well, like over jeans or something. I'm not saying like you have to actually wear them with your fucking trunk out.
I mean, no, I don't know why you think I would have them.
Maybe it's wishful thinking on my part, I don't know.
But also, if I did, surely you wouldn't want them to look like this. Surely you'd want them to look like the Liv Morgan ones that she has.
Holly,
when
I'll
she does the dirty impression.
Well, yes, but again, if you were wearing them, I don't think it's the quality of the material that would probably be getting the attention, if I'm being perfectly frank about that.
No, I don't have arseless champs.
Well, there you
so
go.
Sorry.
I know what to get you for Christmas.
Fine.
That'll be a fun one to open in front of the family, won't it? Oh,
yeah.
I got...
arseless chaps.
Hulk sees Ace coming in the nick of time and fires off a few right hands to the dome as Cowboy looks to fire back. A series of left backhands seems to do the trick for the champion, who sends Orton to the floor with a big right hand. Hulk is in quick pursuit as Ace scurries back into the ring, where he's hit with a back body drop and three body slams in succession. Hogan is feeling it as Orton begs off and rolls to the floor once more. Hot Rod is giving counsel to the challenger, who slowly returns to the squared circle as the ref steps between the two men. Knee to the gut from Cowboy, who whips Hogan into the buckles but misses the following shoulder charge and appears to collide cast first with the post. He drink. Seemed to put his arm, yes, drink indeed, but he seemed to put his forearm forward for the connection.
I wonder if it's made a better noise.
Yeah, probably would have done, actually, wouldn't it? Hot Rod has his head in his hands as Hogan grabs an armringer and drops an elbow to the cast. Well, hang on. Surely that would hurt Hogan, right? Not in this situation, apparently. The left arm is then slammed over the top rope before the champion takes a little snacky snack on the forehead of the challenger. I thought I meant to put sneaky, but I did put snacky snack. Takes a little snacky snack on the forehead of the challenger. Jess is outraged and Vince pretends not to have seen it.
Mm.
More damage to the controversial arm over the top rope before Hogan guillotines the arm over the top rope and drops to the floor. Around the ring post it goes.
Drink.
And Jess says, this is the most vicious... Oh, yeah, sorry, no, I've really confused myself with my choice of phrasing here. Jess says this is the most vicious that Jess has ever seen him in the ring, which would suggest he's seen him more vicious elsewhere, which intrigues me.
Ooh.
Hey, what they do on Saturday night? Back in the ring, and a leaping knee connects from Ace, flooring Hogan. Piper is slamming on the canvas, which apparently Roddy Piper doesn't like one bit. What?
Are you all right?
Flooring Hogan, Piper is slamming on the canvas. Right, now I've kind of put about three thoughts in together, but I remember what I was trying to say. So Piper was smacking his hands on the ring apron as Orton started to do well. And then Vince on commentary said, Roddy doesn't like this at all. Why wouldn't he?
Yeah.
That's your man. Vince, are you okay? Yeah. Do you need to lie down? Do you need to shit on a hooker's chest?
Oh,
are you okay?
Stop it.
Like, it's just really, really off kilter. A flurry of right hands to the face from the cowboy has Hogan fall draped over the middle rope, right in front of Piper, who holds his hands up and steps away, doesn't strike him.
Good.
Atomic drop from Ace, and we get the customary Hogan leg shake cell from that one. Just in case you didn't know what a leg shake was, Holly, I demonstrated
it for you.
Thank you
for demonstrating that.
Because you just looked down in horror.
Well, because I was like, what are you doing?
Well, I wasn't trying to touch you. You're like, what the fuck?
No.
The two count follows, but when Hogan kicks out, he pushes Orton back to his feet. Falling forearm drops was measured by Ace, and a second connects for another near fall. A purposeful knee drop lands on the top of the Hulkster's head before a modified bulldog drives Hogan into the canvas. I didn't quite know what he hit there, but it looked a bit like a bulldog.
Mm.
Mr. T and Piper come close outside the ring, but they refrain from brawling.
Brawling.
Back in the ring, and Ace continues to hit measured right hands and elbows to the champion. Hogan chants from the crowd and the Hulkster begins rising to his knees before looking Cowboy right in the eyes and getting back to his feet.
I was hopeful I'd get a finger wag here.
This was pre-Hulk up.
I was livid.
Because I saw this, I went, oh, Holly's going to be gutted. She doesn't
get the full treatment. I really was.
From there, he unloads with right hands. Jess tells Ace to bail out, but no such luck. Running clothesline by Hogan before an elbow drop lands, but we only get a two count. Headbutt by the champion, who whips Ace into the corner before ascending the ropes to deliver some win-twice-approved Sesame Street punches.
Yay!
Orton manages to get out of the position and hit an inverted atomic drop to the Hulkster. Hogan gets elevated to the top rope where Cowboy is looking to hit a superplex, which basically you might recall was his finishing move, mm-hmm. potentially not. Before he can deliver, Hulk fights back and shoves Orton down to the canvas, where he follows up with a second rope elbow drop to the top of the head.
Snore.
You're getting Greg Valentine flashbacks.
Yes.
Running leg drop lands and we get the cover for the 1-2 punch to the head from Piper. Believably, this actually looked to be out of the referee's view, but it matters not as the bell sounds and Hot Rod is in the ring laying in the boots to Hogan. Mr. T jumps into the fray now and he backs Piper into the corner and unloads with body shots until Orton cracks the cast over his back.
Mm-hmm.
With T momentarily out of the equation, Hot Rod and Orton slowly march Hulk into the corner, but the champion has his fists up, ready to fight. Just as T gathers his senses, Mr. Wonderful and his Martina Navratilova shorts slide into the ring to stand beside the champ. 3-on-2 for the faces and Piper and Orton decide it's best to leave.
Sure.
Holly, what did you think of this one? You can break it down into stanzas, into chapters, however you see fit.
Stanzas, wow.
And let me know what you thought.
I thought this was really boring. I just didn't like it.
Yep.
It didn't entice me.
Mm-hmm.
I was not... I just didn't care. I really didn't care.
Mm-hmm.
Had Piper's Pit not happened, I think I might have cared a bit more.
Okay, interestingly.
I do feel like that really hindered my interest.
Right.
Because that took me right the way down.
So you're getting a W?
I mean, I am getting a W, but
it's a low W.
A low fucking W. Yeah, I just... it just wasn't for me.
Okay.
Also, I didn't get the finger wag, which made me very sad.
Just because I didn't get the finger.
Didn't get the finger. It's been a while.
Well.
Well,
I think my missus just left, to be fair.
Oh, God. But, yeah, I don't know. I read somewhere, and I don't know if this is true or not.
Yeah.
And if you can confirm or not, that you know Orton was wearing a cast.
Yes.
But that was actually a genuine arm injury that he didn't heal from until he actually left.
I know that he, because he worked through it, basically,
yeah.
But he also kept it for a lot longer than was needed, because it was a running thing. If you remember when he returned to be beside Randy around 2005, he was still wearing the cast then.
Right.
So,
well, yes. I know that would have been ridiculous, like, but, yeah, I just read somewhere that, that was a thing. So, also, there was another story that I heard.
Sorry, are you taking calls live on the air? What are you doing? Is this a dial-in session?
Flat intercom. Someone's delivering something. Sorry. There's another story that didn't really reveal too much, and I tried to Google it more, and there's just no info on it that I could find, and then I also didn't care.
Okay.
Saying that in 1986, Orton was involved in an incident where the Fresno Police Department were called, involving an incident between Orton and Piper in a hotel where Orton ended up naked and drunk on the roof of the hotel and was shot with a taser 3 times.
Yeah.
That's the real fucking thing.
Yeah, that's wrestling.
Jesus.
Yeah, I have heard that story before. Obviously, I wasn't there, so I can't vouch for the fact it's true, but I have heard that story. And just to touch upon the cast story that you said, yes, it was a real injury, and the reason why he worked through it is because at that point in time, if you weren't performing, you weren't getting paid.
Okay, fair enough.
So you had to kind of stick in the game for as long as you can, which obviously hindered his recovery time on the arm injury.
Okay.
But then again, the cast then
became... And it then gave him a gimmick, I guess, didn't it?
Very much so.
Okay.
That he used throughout his career from then on.
Well, those stories I found it more interesting than the actual match, I'll be honest.
Look at you pulling out the stories out of the bag.
Are you impressed?
Yeah, I'm very impressed. And I'll be honest, I've got a banger of a story coming up for you in the next section.
Good.
A little bit dark, but having said
I might know.
Oh, yeah, I think you probably do. But
yes.
You haven't actually given it a star rating yet, so what are we going?
1.75. Okay.
So I didn't think it was as good as the first match. I didn't like the ending, which is what knocked it down. Because at first I was going to score it roughly the same as the first match.
Yeah.
But then the ending was like, nah. Even though it's TV, I still don't like it massively.
And it's like a house show, effectively, isn't it? Like.
So I dropped it by a quarter of a star, so that's how I ended up on 1.75.
Fair enough. The only other thing I noticed was how Mr. T is very, very interested in caressing Mr. Wonderful's breasts while he stands on the apron.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you're there, why not? Like, give it a go, see what they feel like. But
firm, like mutton.
It, like, to stop him from, quotation marks here, falling off the apron.
Yeah,
what
are
we going to do? Grab his tits? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, there's an ample size of him to grab.
I know, right?
So, yeah, I don't blame Mr. T. I probably
would
have done the same.
By that, so.
By a bit of titty grabbing. Very
yeah,
nice.
Yeah, absolutely.
Back on the entryway we go, as we see Mean Gene interviewing former WWF Ladies Champion, the Fabulous Moolah. Moolah is wearing Elton John's shades once more, and has some drippy dollar earrings on top of that. I'm now convinced, Holly, that this woman was born 40 and has never looked young. And I'm not talking about May.
Yes.
Gene asks about Moolah's plan, which is quite simple. Regain the title, and this time, hold on to it forever. Simple.
Simples.
Moolah is sick and tired of Cyndi Lauper interfering and putting bags over her head, but sometimes, Holly, that's the only solution to getting it up, so I've been told. She refers to the other bunch of geeks standing around, and when Gene goes to interrupt, Moolah tells him off, which makes him appear like a naughty schoolchild. You right there, Holly, still in the room?
No, I just lost complete track of where I am because of your stupid comment.
I really do not know what you're talking about. Moolah confirms that she spoke to the WWF to ensure that whenever she's in the ring, Lauper cannot be at ringside, and if she is, Moolah will hand the referee this fucking scroll to have her ejected.
Since when did we go back into ye olde times where we would bring out a fucking tea-stained scroll?
I'm thinking year 4 Tudor. So what we did was
we burnt
the edges first, cool. And then tea-stained it afterwards, wasn't it? And that's just classic. So I think that's what Moolah was doing.
Even when they, they do get it out later, I was like, bloody hell, this is absolute crap.
So bear in mind, she said nothing complicated.
No.
She says to Jean, if you understand what I mean. And Jean says, yeah, I think I get the gist. Got a story for you.
Okay. I think I know, but I'll pretend to be shocked.
It gets worse. I think you do know as well.
I think so, I only touched on the surface of it because I didn't want to delve any deeper.
So this story I got from Cultured Vultures.
Hang on. You haven't gone to our usual place.
The last one wasn't either. That was Wrestling
No,
Inc.
I know that one. But
so no, it's only one of the three.
Wow.
So this takes us on a little bit of a journey, and I'll be honest, it's a little dark as well. So WWE have free reign over the canon of professional wrestling. We only know what they want us to know. This can be as simple as and harmless as claims that Stone Cold Steve Austin was a bigger draw than The Rock, even though all available data points towards Rocky holding most of the company's ratings and gate records. But sometimes there's a cover-up of some dark dealings in wrestling's underbelly. We've all heard about Jimmy Snuka allegedly murdering his girlfriend and Vince himself covering it up.
What?
Oh, we haven't. Oh, I've got a story for you another time then.
Fucking hell.
This is a company who would rather hide heinous actions than confront them in the name of good business. By the way, this article came out long before the Vince stuff. This brings us to Moolah, a woman who most fans will remember as the silly old lady who came out with Mae Young during the Attitude Era for tasteless but often funny skits. She was portrayed as a stalwart legend in women's wrestling who still had the passion to come out and entertain people in her advanced age. Her eye-watering near 30-year-long reign as the NWA Women's Champion puts every other lengthy title reign in the dust, and she even won it in the WWE at 76 years of age. This makes her the oldest champion in the history of professional wrestling. The fond memories of Moolah's antics endeared us to her, but what lurked beneath was a tale so dark that it could be a David Fincher film. The truth of Moolah's title reign is a story we've all heard before. Through relentless political leveraging and burying of other talent, Moolah ensured that her spot as the top dog of women's wrestling went unchallenged for longer than a lot of modern fans have even been alive. Okay, so that kind of backstage behaviour isn't exactly uncommon in wrestling. Moolah may have held back a lot of talent, but then so did many other legends of the business. We've all heard about Shawn Michaels and his manipulation of power to ensure he was the most protected man in the roster, but he's still fawned over as an icon. What makes Moolah so special? Well, you have to delve into what she got up to outside of her own wrestling career to learn the horrific truth. Throughout Fabulous Moolah's tenure as a teacher, she abused, stole from, and pimped out her students. You read that correctly, or heard that correctly in this case. The Fabulous Moolah was a sex trafficker. An early example of Moolah's ways can be found with Sweet Georgia Brown, an African-American wrestler who was promoted by Moolah using racially negative means. She was presented as someone who escaped a life of picking cotton to live out a life of luxury as a wrestler. So to clarify, the Fabulous Moolah used race baiting to sell one of her students as the civil rights movement was starting to take shape. On top of this, Brown only ever saw a minuscule percentage of the earnings promised to her by Moolah, who only paid her in cash and refused to let her set up a bank account so she could invest her money. Then there are the allegations of rape at the hands of Moolah's husband, who's believed to be the father of possibly all of Brown's children through sexual assault. If you're a student of Moolah's, you are her property. She did whatever she wanted with you both in the ring and outside of it. Everyone who came through her school was convinced by Moolah to let her book them, and in doing so, she created her own monopoly over women's wrestling. Nobody could ever get over except her. She was the only one that mattered. There's a reason why the Fabulous Moolah is one of the only women's wrestlers from the 50s through to the 80s that you ever hear about. It's because she made sure she was the only one anyone knew.
Wow.
That's a dark story.
That is dark.
Heavy. I assume this was roughly what you thought it was going to be about, but well, kinda, you seem shocked at points.
Yeah, that was more shocking than what I read, because what I read was about the whole, like, yeah, she booked everybody, so she took proportions of their wages and chose like where they lived and literally controlled their lives. And I think a lot of the female wrestlers came forward and said, oh yeah, like I made no money, I had to do this and this. But then obviously what I was reading, it then said there was like the other side of the story that was people saying, oh, I'd never heard about any of this. But there's always two sides, but I didn't read anything as dark as that.
Yeah, so by all accounts she was pimping
Jesus.
The women out and still taking that as well, obviously.
God.
In terms of income. Just very, very sad. So that's why when this story originally came out, the WWE had to take, I think they had an equivalent of, you know, the Andre the Giant Battle Royal.
Yeah.
They had a Fabulous Moolah tournament, right, or Battle Royal type thing, and they changed the name of it. They took her name off
I
it
see.
For the women. Yeah, so it was very touchy. So whilst a 28-year title run is impressive, yeah. look what it took to achieve that.
Jesus.
Basically selling a little bit of your soul.
Mm-hmm.
As Moolah trots away to the ring, Mean Gene is now with Cyndi Lauper, who says there is no way Moolah is going to ban her, and she's going to stick by her girl, who is going to win, and she'll make sure of it. And if Moolah thinks that Cyndi fights dirty, let's talk about what happened at Wrestling Mania.
Yes, I did write that down. That did make me absolutely howl.
And Wrestling Mania!
Honestly, also, I was quite hopeful that she would be banned from ringside, I'll be honest.
And she kind of was.
Not enough.
Wendi Richter might as well not even be standing there as she's shouting that they have proof Moolah cheats, but no one cares.
Mm-hmm.
Fabulous Moolah versus Wendi Richter with Cyndi Lauper for the WWF Ladies title. I'm still crediting Cyndi Lauper as kind of being there for reasons that we'll explain in a second.
Sure.
Howard Finkel introduces the challenger, the Fabulous Moolah, to the crowd, and the octogenarian does a geriatric shuffle, which was apparently sexy in the 1910s. The fans are rabid as they claw at Lauper when the champion and her manager make their way to the ring. But when they enter, Moolah hands the scroll, the decree, to the official. The Fink informs us that Lauper is indeed banned from the ringside area and she's escorted back by a security team as we head to a commercial break. When we return, we receive that Cyndi has been sat in the entryway with a monitor where she's getting a live feed of the action in the ring. Cyndi waves at the monitor as though she is unfamiliar with the concept of a TV and thinks the women in the ring can see her too.
Yes, she does.
Like, it's bizarre. It's so bizarre. Like, people don't know what high fives are. We've got the originator of the Hawk Tour, and Cyndi Lauper doesn't know what a fucking TV is.
No.
When we return, we've just done that.
Ooh.
Speaking of, back in the ring, the match has started and we first of all see an eye rake from the challenger.
Boo.
Without any shred of irony, Moolah is legitimately wearing a full-on bathing suit for this one.
I did make a note and say, we're back to the era of the women only being able to wear, effectively swimsuits.
Tights and bathing suits,
yeah.
As Richter looks to return, she is met with a soft knee to the midsection and boot which puts her back on the floor. And we see Lauper going nuts at the monitor position. Moolah swings a boot in Dave Wolf's direction before deciding to taunt the crowd on the opposite side of the ring. This proves to be a mistake as Wendi Richter dropkicks Moolah from behind, sending her girdle over chicken fillets to the floor.
Give her due, right? She's 60 fucking too. It did make me nervous, I'll be honest. But, to do that, fair enough.
Yeah, it was good. Although, I will say, we kind of completely sandbagged my girdle over chicken fillets.
I mean, I thought it was amusing, but... you want me to laugh?
No, not now. Not now. I don't want a sympathy
laugh. Well, people might laugh.
I'm
not going to guarantee. I don't know.
I'm a delight, Holly, I'll have you know.
I didn't say you weren't.
No, that's fair. This proves to be a mistake. We've just covered that. Wendi is in hot pursuit and connects with a stiff forearm before picking her up and putting her back in the ring. Richter hits the ropes but finds herself back body dropped and the challenger gets a one count. The two women trade a couple of blows from their knees before the champion uses her knee to choke Moolah over the middle rope. She follows this up by pulling the challenger, ooh, who was holding the ropes into the air and causing her to land face first on the canvas. We then see the reverse of this, with Moolah landing on her back, and this gets a near fall. Stiff chop by Moolah, who returns to her choking ways over the top rope, and Vince says this has not had much in the way of technical wrestling, which is a polite way of saying this is horse shit. Body slam attempt from Moolah is reversed into a small package, and Richter holds on long enough to get the 1, the 2, the 3, and retain the ladies' title.
Yep.
As soon as the bell sounds, Cyndi sprints from the monitor position to the ring to hug the champion and have their celebratory dance.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think of the match? Mm-hmm. What did you score it?
I was absolute shit. Didn't expect it not to be, I'll be honest. I didn't have an expectation. I was like, what did I actually think this was going to be? 0.25, and I gave it a 0.25 because it was quick. Oh, I can't, hang on.
I'm just showing.
You gave it 0.25.
0.25, and my exact reason was the fact that Moolah took the bump over the top rope to the floor.
Uh-huh. Fair.
It wasn't good, but it couldn't be long.
It had to be short. Yeah, of course.
From here, we go back to the entryway. Mean Gene says that he has a special treat as we're joined by the JYD, who talks like he's racing to finish each sentence and informs us that his mother had never been to New York and he thought this would be a very respectful time to do so and he wants to wish every mum a happy Mother's Day, including his own. We learn his mother's name is Bertha, who says she's very proud of her son and hopes he can come home soon.
Aww.
She obviously didn't want to talk, which is fair enough.
Yeah, she's also quite a stone stonewalled.
Yeah, and also when they say coming home or going home, that's a term in wrestling which means finish the match.
Oh.
I don't think that's what she means. I think she literally means she wants him back home. I thought it was very weird that she looked the same age as him, though. Did you not think they looked very similar age-wise?
Yeah, he looks a lot older.
Yeah, I think he did. I think he just aged before his time, to be fair. Speaking of, he's in a match now. We've got the Duke of Dorchester, Pete Doherty, versus the Junkyard Dog with Bertha.
Who the fuck is this guy, by the way?
The Duke of Dorchester, Pete Doherty.
No, I couldn't find anything out about him.
I'll be honest. He gave me enough in this match that I didn't want to look for anything else on him.
Okay.
The JYD set up a chair on the outside for his mother to get a good view of the action, and the Duke is quickly out on the apron to threaten her, where he is met with a punch and a headbutt from the dog. In the ring, and Doherty takes another big right, which causes him to swing wildly at the air, only to then be levelled with a clothesline. JYD barks in celebration. The dog heads over to Doherty and, while standing on the apron, grabs him by the hair and lifts him off the floor as the toothless Duke screams in a very unsettling manner. It's almost like Mankind, but not quite. It just sounds like he's not all there. Doherty pulls himself back up, courtesy of Bertha's chair, and makes as though he's about to hit her before he's cut off by the dog and returned to the ring.
I'm sorry, but she became my favourite person of the night because she no-sells it at all. She just looks at him and just doesn't move. Like, no flinch, no nothing. Love it.
That woman, based on the era, she has gone through some fucking shit.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So I don't think White Boy over here is going to really be threatening her.
I thought it was absolutely fucking brilliant. She just sat there just unfazed by everything.
Very much so. I don't think she wanted to be there. She's dressed like she's going to a fucking sermon on Sunday, by the way. So she's in her Sunday finery.
Yeah,
absolutely. She's probably the second best dressed person on the entire show that we've seen so far. And I've got a feeling I know where that award's going later on. I
don't know what you mean.
So, where we go. Who eventually returns to the ring by climbing... No. So the Duke fires off with a series of rights, but they seem to have no effect on JYD, who drops Pete with one of his own. Snapmare takedown, and we get one of Holly's all-time favourite moves.
I hate this so much.
The kneeling dog headbutt.
I hate this so much.
I love the fact, again, called it out before you actually did the action.
Oh, I hate it.
The final of said headbutts sends the Duke to the floor, who eventually returns to the ring by climbing to the top rope to taunt. And I'm now of the opinion that this character has been kicked in the head by a mule as he's press slammed from the top rope to the canvas. Whilst holding Doherty in the air, JYD delivers three big headbutts that make the Duke do the stanky leg. Atomic drop connects and JYD is in full control. The dog scoops Pete off the canvas and holds him for an age before delivering a big power slam and earning himself the 1-2-3. The JYD invites his mother into the ring and both he and Bertha do the JYD leg shake to a big reaction from the fans. This is so fucking good, okay?
Yeah, that was...
Because this woman has stonewalled everything, like you said. She goes in the ring, he's like, you've got to do the dance with her. She's fucking giving it full welly.
She has a lovely time. I actually love that.
Does it every bit as well as he does as well.
Yeah.
Holly, thoughts on the match? Give it a rating.
Well, you know, at the end, obviously there's a 1-2-3. There was no bell.
Yeah, there wasn't actually. You're
so
right.
So that I noticed.
So that match is still going today.
So it's still a thing. I gave it higher than the women's match.
So did I.
Only briefly.
So did I.
And literally it was fine length. Like, it wasn't too long.
Yep.
It was fine. The whole point of it, I understood. And there were some moves, maybe, that I was like...
What a manoeuvres. Yep.
Yeah, what a manoeuvre. Where JYD was like, he just showed he was strong. Fine.
Yep.
I almost deducted points from the shitty headbutts, but never mind. 0.5. Oh, you're showing me your phone again. Ah, 0.5.
Yep, we tallied up
again. Oh my gosh, who are we?
And I gave it for the fact that JYD actually did some moves. I thought the character work from the Duke was fine.
Yeah.
And Bertha's stanky leg. The dance at the end, that was really good, even though that wasn't in the match.
Mm-hmm.
And now, Holly.
Yeah.
Oh. We go to a special Mother's Day celebration. Are you excited? I'm excited.
No,
and you're right to be not excited. As we return from the final commercial break, what I thought was the final commercial break, I'd like to add, we see a host of the wrestlers stood backstage where a makeshift party has been organised. Mean Gene talks to JYD, who says he's proud to have his mother here and again wishes everyone a happy Mother's Day. Bertha says she's very proud.
Mm.
And JYD's talking, he does a like in the middle of talking, and it's just a bit off-putting.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're, I don't know, okay, let's say I'm Bertha. Okay. I'm going to role play.
God.
If my son's there and starts talking like that, hit him around the back of the head. Yeah, I didn't raise you to talk like that.
What the fuck are you doing?
Yeah. Speak properly when being spoken to.
Okay.
Okay, so just saying, Bertha didn't quite do her job there, but that's fine. Jean then moves to Sheik, who says, Jean Min, and then that he's sick of Cyndi Lauper and that fat Lou Albano. The camera goes to Lauper, saying, Hey, hey, hey! But, sister, you cannot beat Sheik's brand of crazy, yeah. So do not bother trying. Volkov says his mother is back in Russia, and that she doesn't fly on a broom, like Cyndi Lauper says, so Jean swiftly moves on. This next bit, Holly, really made me laugh.
I knew you'd like this.
Jean approaches Freddie Blassie and asks him who in the world he's standing with. Blassie says, This is my mother, Laura! Isn't she pretty? Yes, she is, Freddie. She's also 40 years younger than you. This is great as well. Jean places his hand on her shoulder and leans in for a kiss, saying, Mum, how are you? But Freddie Blassie goes, Get your hands off! And Jean goes, and moves on. It is hilarious. Really, really funny. Probably my highlight of the entire fucking...
Also, if that's how he kisses his mother, he's got issues.
Well, yes. Yeah, I was trying to think of a comeback for that, but there really isn't one, to be honest.
No.
Lou Albano has written a cocaine poem, which goes, If you're something special, can't you see? Because without your mothers, we couldn't be. May the good Lord Jesus bless you.
Honestly, just turn this fucking shit off.
This man is a cocaine frenzy and a danger to society. We now move on to a tame Hulk Hogan, who is standing with his mum, Ruth Hogan. Yes, Holly, that is Hulk's actual mother.
Yeah, this actually I thought was quite nice.
Hogan says he's really pleased to be here, having a nice time with some friends, except for Sheik and Volkov. Jean now finally gets to Cyndi Lauper, who hopes everyone is having a good time, and her mother says that she has done a wonderful job. Wendy Richter is briefly allowed to speak, to send her love to her mother back home, but now the party is interrupted.
Oh, this is the challenger.
Hey. Making her way into the room is the wardrobe love child of the warlord and demolition. And under that clobber is the fabulous Moolah, who said, how could they possibly have a party without her presence?
Yep.
She says that she has a daughter too, and she raised her right. Not like how Cyndi was raised. Moolah gets in the face of Cindy's mother, which riles the East Coast Banshee, and in what proves to be a very unnatural motion, Moolah is sent into the big cake that stood in the back of the room. But mainly Jean takes the fall and gets covered in frosting.
Which I did find amusing.
Could you see how Jean was trying to position everyone for that spot? He was pulling Moolah like, I'm not going in the cake, you're going in the cake.
She was like, absolutely not,
not
you
in this
are.
Gear, that's mental.
Yeah, exactly.
As he chastises Moolah, Cyndi picks up a chunk of cake and cracks Moolah over the head with it, but the thing doesn't break and just clunks her. Moolah looks pissed off and grabs cake that she tosses in the direction of Lauper, who's tear-arsing her way out of there, and Moolah slips on her arse in the process of throwing. This gave so much more than it ever should have done.
I know.
Oh, it was great. We briefly go back to Vince and Jess on comms, where Vince asks the body what his highlight of the night was. Jess claims that seeing Mr. Blunderful getting jumped by Cowboy and Piper during the pit was his favourite moment.
Mm.
Vince asks what he thought of Hogan's title defence, but Jess is not impressed as Hogan broke every rule there was to break. We get sent again to a commercial break and return to hear Vince McMahon get interrupted by a foghorn only to say farewell as the credits begin to roll as we see a replay of Hogan's entrance.
Yeah.
One thing I will say about this venue, the fans are too close to the wrestlers as every fucker is getting grabbed as they go by, and this, Holly, brings us to the end of the show.
Yes, it does.
Thoughts?
Oh, God. Right, so as I said, I was open-minded. I really, because I knew I could be. But my God, did this test me.
Yep.
This really fucking tested me.
Yep.
The best match of the night was the first one.
Yep.
Six-man tag for me.
Yeah, I scored that highest.
I have put here... God, I worry about myself sometimes. The six-man tag was fine. The rest was a limp wank.
A limp wank. So just like there's no... Okay, fine.
There's no effort in it.
There's no effort.
It feels a bit lacklustre.
But does it still get the job done? That's what I need to know on the limp one.
I didn't say, so...
Okay.
I did say my highlight was getting Jesse back.
Yes.
That's it. That is it.
Which moves on nicely to what was the outfit of the night, because I feel like that
obviously it's him.
So Jess has won this
episode. Outstanding.
Moolah came close.
She would have been second, I think. Okay. But yeah, as a whole, This was a 1.5 out of 10.
Yeah, it's not good.
And the reason it gets a 1.5 is because it's short. It was less than an hour, and I got Jesse back.
I would give it a 2.
Okay.
Out of 10, because it wasn't good.
No.
It was quick. However, things that shouldn't have been fun for me were.
Yeah.
Like the whole cake bit, because I imagine that whatever Cindy picks up, there's still a bit of the base of the cake behind it. So that's what she effectively decks him with. And I think she was genuinely like, oh, fuck, I need to run out of here. Freddie Blassie, brilliant. Freddie Blassie was a low-key highlight of the show for me.
Mm-hmm.
The accidental turns of phrases like mother, brother.
I liked mother, brother.
Wrestling Mania, Hogan calling someone daddy.
Oh, I hate that.
It was brilliant. So those parts, the wrestling wasn't good. Like you said, the opening match was fine. So I give it a 2 out of 10. But I still think it was quite fun, even though it's 2 out of 10.
It's fine. Yeah, I'm happy to obviously watch them
because
it's not like I watch it and deadpan.
Yeah,
there is emotion coming, usually anger, but there is emotion coming from it.
Yeah.
And there was, you know, there was some good bits. Like the first match, I enjoyed.
I also think as well that I've seen what the second. I think it's the second episode of Saturday Night's main event. What's got on there,
right.
And that. We'll test you
if
we ever get to that. So if we ever need a short one, we're going back and doing something like that.
Okay.
But yeah, I think, again, it's one of those ones where even though it's probably the lowest rated show we've ever covered,
mm-hmm.
it was still the crap gives such good entertainment value in terms of us then discussing it because we don't have the discussions prior to... We might mention, say, oh, this person's getting something.
Yeah.
But beyond that, we don't go into the detail. I really enjoyed that. Even though, like I said, it was a 2. That was fun for me.
Okay.
That was really fun.
Okay.
So, before we depart on episode 35, have you got the socials there?
I actually do this time.
You do? Nice.
I do.
Did I buy you enough time?
You did. Thank you. Much
no
appreciated.
Worries.
It's just because I don't trust my brain to actually remember.
Fair enough.
So, wintwicepod@gmail.com is the email address. And no, I'm not going to make a dick of myself and sing anything this time.
I forgot you did that.
Yeah. And then Instagram and YouTube is Win Twice Pod. Oh, and you did the other thing that I haven't written down.
X,
thank
Twitter.
You.
Same
I'm
thing, though.
I'm too old. I don't understand that.
Yeah, and the last thing you put on Instagram actually went really well. I think it's had like over 2,000 views nearly on the reel. So hopefully we'll get some more traction going there.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, thank you again for all the support. Again, if you have any show suggestions that you'd like us to cover or... when we actually get into a habit of actually telling you guys what show we're going to do next, so you can tell us your thoughts, which again I'll happily read out on air. I'll say, well, it's not live, but you know what I mean. I think we're still doing really well on YouTube from over 2,000 subscribers, going nicely there. We were actually going to do a different show for this episode, but we needed a shorter one, so hopefully that'll get covered in the next couple of weeks. And we've also got progress to look forward to at the end
we
of the month as well, which is great. We've seen the full card for that, which I'm looking forward to.
Well, not the full card. There's a new match being announced tonight. Yeah.
Oh, okay, I thought that was the full card.
No, there's a surprise. I want to say it's called an... It's in,
Invitational?
Hang on. Can you jabber while I go?
I can certainly
while
jabber.
I find out, because I don't want to say the wrong thing. I look like a bell end.
But yeah, as well, if you, for whatever reason, if you didn't want to send an email with show suggestions, you can contact Holly directly through Instagram. Put your show ideas down there. And like I said, it's just nice having, you know, the feedback and hearing from you guys. We actually did get one match. Something I'm really glad we have got this pause now, because I get to mention it. Our last episode, which was WrestleMania 12, which got uploaded onto YouTube, we had a commenter inform us that they are actually at the event themselves. And I was very curious, because obviously if someone was in the crowd, they've got a unique perspective that, you know, us watching on TV didn't have. And they were in agreement with you on the Hollywood backlot rule that it just wasn't good viewing for someone who was in the audience, which makes sense.
Yeah, it was interesting to have that.
And he also said that from Shawn Michaels' entrance, he was under the bit where Michaels came down.
Mm.
So he was quite near that section of the crowd.
Wow.
I just thought that was really interesting to hear.
Nice.
I didn't. One thing I meant to ask him, which I didn't, so if you are listening to this and you happen to hear it, let me know how you felt about the main event, obviously given the length of time that that match was given. Because I imagine if you're there in person, it could be a struggle, because I reckon time might go a little bit slower. I don't know. I'm just curious to find out. But yeah, thank you very much for all the interaction on there.
Holly, I found it. I'm here.
So what's the additional match?
Yeah, so they posted something yesterday that said, After their incredible Destination 2024 show today, at Noah Global have been in touch about a guest match to take place at Chapter 169, match to be revealed tomorrow.
Ooh, so as in tomorrow or
today?
Oh, okay.
So it will be announced today.
Ooh, that's exciting. And I'm really looking forward to seeing...
I thought you'd like that.
I'm really looking forward to seeing in the August show Kenta having a match. That's going to be fun. Not seen him in person myself.
We'll find out later what that is.
Yep, next episode, as far as I'm aware, we're back on the March Through the Mania series. Might have a little treat for WrestleMania 13 as well. On one of the particular matches, you already know about it, and I think your memory's just been
jogged. My memory has just twigged in,
as to what it is. So looking forward to seeing that, but hopefully everyone has enjoyed this outing. Had a lovely time. I've had a nice time. You?
I've had a nice time with you. I didn't have a nice time with this. I don't know what I call it.
I'll take the first part as the compliment and choose to overlook the rest of it. But yeah, until the next one, guys, take care.
Bye.
Until next time, this has been a Win Twice Wrestling production. Peace out.